You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have Frank Holmes with me once again. For those of you who aren't familiar with Frank, I think most of you most likely are, but he has led the U.S. Global Investors since 1989 as CEO and CIO. Frank is most certainly a creative thinker with an open mind to new opportunities, which is why he is not only devoted to precious metals investments and miners of precious metals, but he is also involved as the interim executive chairman of a company that mines cryptocurrencies. It's a very interesting company named Hive Blockchain Technologies. Trades in Toronto under the symbol HIVE, I believe, and in the U.S. Under HVBTF. U.S. Global has several funds that focus on regional markets and on resource markets, including the precious metals. And Frank has also established a couple of very interesting ETFs, one of them investing in gold mining. That's GOAU, G-O-A-U, on the New York Stock Exchange. And the other, very interesting opportunity, an airline ETF, also trades on the New York Exchange, JETS, J-E-T-S is the symbol. And Frank writes a very interesting and informative weekly letter that is available free of charge to investors by simply signing up at usfunds.com. And you can follow a couple of his Twitter accounts as well. I believe it's U.S. Funds and Bulldog Homes. And just before we came on the show, I noticed that there is an invitation to join a webcast tomorrow, this March 10th, at 2 o'clock New York time. And the topic will be gold mining equities and the Hive blockchain technologies. Frank, I'm so happy you could join me today. Thanks. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Hey, Jay, it's great to be with you again. And tomorrow is about the debate. There's this big debate of exclusivity, one against the other, and hopefully the thesis will be they can be inclusive. We were supposed to have a society that's culturally more inclusive. Well, so should be these asset classes.
I couldn't agree with you more. But let me ask you, is Peter Schiff going to be there?
No, he's not at all. And his partner... And his partner, Roy C. Bagg, has made all of his money only in crypto. And they hate crypto, but that's where they made their money.
Well, that is kind of funny. Frank, you know, I want to get your views on interest rates and how that may impact various equity markets and ask you about gold and airlines, your airline ETF, and some of those more traditional topics that we talked to you about. But with regard to blockchain, we had Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute on right a few minutes ago. He is very much a believer in gold as money, but he told our listeners a few minutes ago that he sees room for both gold and cryptocurrencies to exist. In other words, inclusivity, as you're talking about. And obviously you agree with that. Could you comment on how they might coexist and how they might actually work in harmony with each other?
Well, gold is the fourth most liquid asset in the world, and gold is in tremendous value in a very small space. And gold, once it's made into beautiful jewelry, you do not need electricity. Bitcoin, you need electricity. So we have to think about that. And a couple of weeks ago, we had these rolling blackouts in Texas, and I can see what happens. We have no electricity, and it's frightfully cold outside. But it's really, to me, it's important to recognize they're both alternative asset classes for a lot of investors. And Bitcoin is digital and it is highly volatile. But most interesting is Tesla is more volatile than gold, Bitcoin, and Ethereum over one day trading or 10 days trading.
Uh-huh.
So I think that when you look at these disruptive industries such as Teslas and the Bitcoins and the Zooms of the world, they're disrupting the normal process that are out there. and they provide opportunity. You just can't eat a whole plate full of jalapenos. They'll wreck the dish. They can add flavor to it. And that's the way I look at alternative asset classes. And I think a lot of young people are the first to adapt to Bitcoin, Ethereum, through the Robinhoods and the PayPals, et cetera, allow you to get fractals of it. And I think that's an important part of that. And you're younger, you can take bigger risks. But gold's not going to go away. Gold will always be a key component. And gold for the past 20 years, it was up 80% of the time. Last year, it outperformed the S&P 500 again. It was up a nice 25% for a big liquid asset class that's pretty stable because the DNA volatility of gold is the same as the S&P 500. But it's outperformed in 20 years the S&P by 250%. So I don't think gold goes away, and I've always advocated this 10% golden rule of gold and or high quality quality gold stocks and rebalance. But Bitcoin, Ethereum, it's more speculative, and having a 2% weighting in this in a portfolio because you see something, a transformation taking place in an economy that's disruptive, like Uber disrupted the limo business. Sure. That's what we're in.
Well, creative destruction, I think it was Schumpeter who came up with that notion, and it certainly is alive and well, and we do need to adapt. To some of us older folks, it's more difficult, and as you say, the younger folks have more time to recoup if they're wrong. But I guess gold really provides reduces the volatility of a portfolio then to a great extent, and as you pointed out, I think it was gold has actually outperformed Warren Buffett over the last since this turn of the century. So you know, people don't realize how well gold, just owning gold, not the gold shares necessarily, but just owning
And Franco Nevada has crushed Berkshire Hathaway in the past decade.
Well, I know that's one of your favorites, those royalty and streaming companies, and maybe we'll get to that. I think you've answered my question, Frank, in terms of what caused you to get involved in cryptocurrencies. I think you just basically answered that.
What happened to me was I was trying to launch an ETF, Bitcoin ETF, and I quickly recognized, and rightfully so, the concerns the SEC had of anti-money laundering laws, that some crypto was dealt with in the dark world and all of a sudden showed up in the New York Stock Exchange. The same thing was with Canada. They had this great concern. But software now is able to find out if any coin has ever been in the dark part of the world, actually better than they can cash US dollars, $100 bills. It's easier to track Bitcoin if it's been at the dark side of the world. But I think that I had this knowledge. It wasn't going anywhere. And along came this opportunity. And so I said, well, when you're a miner, you actually, every 10 minutes for Bitcoin, you validate a transaction, you get a brand new virgin coin. It's never been touched. There's no AML concern. There's no KYC. You are the creator of that nugget of gold, that crypto gold, if you want to call it. So I became very fascinated with it, and I saw tremendous volatility like gold. I also saw that you can get massive gross profit margins, and they can contract rapidly, and you can have huge revenue per employee. So that reminded me of a royalty company. So we put up the institutional money, the first $5 million, immediately raised $30 million, and HIVE was the first crypto mining company. Other people followed suit behind it. Last year, it traded 2.4 billion shares in Canada and the U.S. over the counter and in Germany. It outperformed. Bitcoin was up 300% last year. Gold was up, we said, like 25%. So Bitcoin did outperform because they halved it. The supply of Bitcoin mining every 10 minutes was halved last May. So what would you think would happen to gold, I tell people, if the supply was halved overnight? Oh, if it went from 90 million, 100 million ounces to 50 million, gold would be at 10,000. So I think that that's what took place to understanding that crypto world. And so what we're seeing is that HIVE, it has these massive gross profit margins as Bitcoin, Ethereum went up. Ethereum was up almost 470%, and we had record profits. So far in the 9 months, we're the most profitable crypto mining company. I think cumulative, we made $28 million. And now we've expanded the future with opportunities for growth that'll take us what they call 2,400 petahash of mining Bitcoin. We are the only miner of Ethereum on an industrial scale. Mm-hmm. We also bank the coins. So what happened, Jay, is that there was this audience of gold investors that were reluctant to go to a crypto exchange, open an account with all the negative news. So Hive became their proxy.
Ah.
And so there's a lot of a crossover saying, okay, I want to be in the space, but, you know, I'll buy $10,000 worth of Hive, and uh-huh. that will be my proxy on Bitcoin Ethereum. And it grew with enthusiasm. What we have also done, we outperformed the other companies last year, is because we're very thoughtful of the number of shares outstanding. So mm-hmm. other companies like Riot went from 25 million to 75 million shares outstanding, and Marathon, MARA, it went from, I think, 10 million to 80 million shares, massive dilution. But these companies had massive appeal in the capital markets because they're mining in America Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so Hive's next journey is also only green. We're only green energy, which is very important strategy. Some of the other ones have coal. Most of the Bitcoin mining in the world today is China, which is coal. We're only green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's obviously of great concern to a lot of people. So you did, I mean, you had a, your history then, Frank, your operating history with this company is only 9 months? Or how far back does it go?
I was the first J company to come out to crypto mining. Mm-hmm. It was public. It was usually private entities.
Yes.
And it came out in September of 2017.
Uh-huh.
And it went up to $1 billion market cap, and then it fell during the 2019 dramatically, just like Bitcoin went from 19,000 down to 3,000. Ethereum went from 1,400 down to $80. Now, you know, they've all rebounded dramatically, and Bitcoin's made all-time new highs. So we've seen the cryptocurrencies move up with it because they're very profitable today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were producing, I read your quarterly financials that just came out. I think you're in 5 cents or so per share for the quarter, Frank, I believe. Is that it?
Correct.
And something like 12 cents perhaps over 9 months. So, you know, on a share price, it's, I don't know, $4 in U.S. money, four and a half or so today, I think I saw it. But you stopped producing Bitcoin. Was that because it became too expensive, or why did you stop?
We went through something very unfortunate. We went through a proxy battle in 2019, which lasted about a quarter. It never went for the full battle, and we resolved everything. We took control from the largest shareholder that was the original company that Genesis Mining that had partnered with, and we took control of the costs because the costs were out of control with them, mm-hmm. and that's what we did. And we dropped the cost dramatically. There was basically three of us, Tobias Ebel in Europe, Darcy DeBaris, who's our CFO, and myself. We basically got control and started this new vision, and we started expanding in Canada. We're in Quebec. We bought last year during March 30 megawatts of capacity, and now we're just closing New Brunswick for 50 megawatts of capacity. Today, I think by the end of this quarter, we should have about 120 megawatts of 130 megawatts of capacity going to 150 megawatts.
Okay, and I guess your existing facilities are in Sweden and Iceland.
Yes, and hydro energy in Sweden and in Canada, and geothermal in Iceland.
Okay, sure, that makes sense.
And it's all stranded electricity, Jay. You know, it's none of this. The real polluters of this world, when you hear about Bitcoin, is predominantly China and Kazakhstan. Anyone that's involved with Kazakhstan, it's coal. And in China, Inner Mongolia, it's coal. And it's definitely pollution to the air. We are focused on where there's surplus pockets of electricity that's inexpensive and does not impair. Like in Sweden, we locked in 1.7 cents a megawatt. It's very, very inexpensive.
For sure. Absolutely. And does Hive, then, does it inventory or hold these, the Ethereum and the Bitcoin, yes, for appreciation? Or does it sell some of it? Or how does it?
Like the Rob McEwen old days when he had Gold Corp, He kept the gold because it was too cheap to sell.
Yeah.
And we have over $40 million worth of Bitcoin and Ethereum on our balance sheet, and it grows every day.
Frank, you're very lean. As you say, your costs are very low. You don't have that many people, right? You alluded to that earlier.
You saw it as
a royalty company.
And if you look at next year, this time, we would have, say, 10 employees, and we would be doing a Bitcoin at this price, close to $250 million in revenue, and the cash flow, if it existed, to like doing a pro forma, forward-looking, it always has its risk, but if it was the sort of perfect world of all those machines that we've ordered, paid for, we're mining today, we would be doing close to $25 million of revenue per employee. That's like, I would say, when you look at royalty companies.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I would imagine mostly engineers or what kind of people do you?
Electrical engineers.
Yeah, exactly.
Coders, people that know how to code software. Mm-hmm. We have state-of-the-art software in Sweden where we can tool down our consumption of electricity, and we do it at peak periods. If the local area gets stressed, that we will help out the local hydro company, so that therefore we're very, very caught up with being helpful to the community. So the software is much faster than having an extra 100 megawatts to turn it on. And takes an hour to turn it up, the electricity. We can turn it on a dime.
That's pretty amazing. What about Ethereum? Is there a limit to the number that can be mined?
There is a limit, but it's not as definitive. It starts to shrink and shrink over time, but like Bitcoin, is very, very black and white when it ends. So that's a big difference. And for your listeners, I recommend you Google what's called Metcalfe's Law, and that really basically explains why we've had this massive surge in crypto. Just like our Jets ETF, this time last year was $35 million. It's now $4 billion. It used to trade 35,000 shares a day, now it trades 3.5 million a day.
Wow.
And it all started with millennials coming in, playing the rebound in the airlines, because historically, a year after a crisis, they rebound 80 to 120%. This sort of brought in bigger investors because there's more liquidity. Price discovery is very important. What's happened with Bitcoin and Ethereum through Robinhood and through PayPal last year, you can buy a fractal. You don't have to go and spend, buy one coin for $50,000.
Yeah.
You can buy a tenth of a coin for $5,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that has allowed more and more people to come in and speculate on higher Bitcoin Ethereum prices. Now, Ethereum is what's called a smart contract. And Ethereum is very important for the protocol. Like the bottom of this whole bear cycle in 2019 took place when JP Morgan launched their crypto stable coin, and that's on the backbone of Ethereum. So the faster and more of these stable coins come out by the big banks, the more Ethereum they're going to use, the higher the Ethereum price. And this proof of stake over proof of mining, which we do, absorbs $5 billion with the Ethereum coin. So we see, like, the silver market, the shrinking supply of silver, we're seeing it with Ethereum, which is projecting a higher price. And silver is needed for solar energy. 20% of demand is for solar energy. Ethereum is all the backbone for DeFi and stable coins. So I see lots of overlaps between Bitcoin being like gold and Ethereum being like silver.
Interesting. What about some other cryptocurrencies, for example? I think Litecoin is one that's out there. Are there prospects that you might mine other?
No. Like we did some, but we're so big, Jay. Now, like mm-hmm. we're a big company, and so if we turn on megawatts of something else that has a market cap of $500 million, then we would all of a sudden be a major force. And you can't be more than 50% of the production, otherwise it loses its decentralization and its independence. So we have to be very cognizant of that. So where we have the flexibility and capacity is clearly Bitcoin, Ethereum. They're the two big workhorses of the world. Bitcoin is the monetary end. Smart contracts is Ethereum, which is, if you want to, down the road, you'll see insurance contracts being put on that smart contract. You'll see lots of things being embedded within the Ethereum design.
Frank, you mentioned you've got a couple of new projects being built, being constructed. I guess you will have in, I think you said Quebec and New Brunswick. What sort of capital costs are involved?
Well, they've gone up dramatically, Jay. There's a shortage right now of chips worldwide. We're seeing in the car industry.
Yes.
We're seeing the unexpected consequences of COVID, disruptive of supply lines. Shipping costs have gone from $2,000 a container to $7,000. Monthly shipping, holding, retaining has gone up 12-fold. So the whole concept that there's actually a shortage of equipment. And so if you want to go buy an ASIC miner, you would say I would be paying $20 a theta hash. Well, now it's going to cost me $100. So it's going to 5-fold. We've been very fortunate of being able to lock in very attractive pricing from different providers. We want to make sure that we never sort of diversify where we're mining from. We want to make sure the sources of where we're getting our equipment, most of it comes from China, where it's manufactured. So you get the Samsung and Taiwanese chips going into the manufacturers of these equipment. So we predominantly use AMD and NVIDIA, predominantly AMD chips. For mining Ethereum and ASIC chips for mining Bitcoin.
So you've done very, very well. I see that your income during the third quarter, ending December 31st, 2020, $13.7 million, or 174% higher than the like period of 2019. You're coming on, as I understand it, with a couple of more facilities. What kind of growth might we anticipate going forward? I know it's a forward-looking statement. You have to be careful.
So we have purchased the equipment that takes us from about 400 petahash this time last year, or 300. We went from zero to 350, 400. We're going to 2,400. So we're talking about a six-bagger increase in our Bitcoin production profile.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is very exciting, and obviously people can, it's a public company, so they can track this if they're interested, and we look forward to it, and I guess people should tune in also to your webcast tomorrow as well. And how can people do that, Frank?
Go to usfunds.com and log on, and I'll see you there.
Okay, but we have a couple more minutes yet, Frank, so don't leave. I just wanted to make sure I got that question in for you. Just looking at the gold shares, then, what's your take on the gold mining sector right now? It certainly hasn't been one of the more exciting things. I sort of think that maybe the cryptocurrencies have co-opted the gold and gold share sector. But obviously, you're bullish on gold, as you said. You explained why. But how's your fund doing? Not your fund, your ETF, GoAU. How's that doing?
What is always said, Jay, when you first talked about it in our first interview, it modeled to outperform the GDXJ. It back testing when we launched it almost four years ago this summer, that it outperformed 90% of the time in rolling 12-month periods because it's very selective of the stocks it picks. 30% are royalty companies. The other ones have to have revenue growth last quarter or four quarters, cash flow. We love free cash flow, get some extra tick in the box on that quant approach. It's outperformed. It's done exactly what it said it would do, even after fees. It's outperformed the GDXJ, and we're happy with that for the past year, the past 3 years since we launched it. And I think going forward, touch wood, I hope that discipline that the model uses will continue. Gold is interesting because the PMIs, the Purchasing Manufacturers Index, which we track and write about every month in my blog, you know, it's on a tear when you have China and America. Europe is still trying to climb its way out of below 50, but China and America are very strong, and that's why copper is at all-time highs here. That's 9 years. And I think it's going to take out the 20-year high. As the cycle goes on with all this green spending, because you're going to need copper. The PMI, Purchasing Manufacturers Index, is a great leading indicator of global economic growth. It's on a tear. So two is shipping is on a tear. So this is all positive. Yep. What is spooky is the 10-year yield, the 10-year government bond, went from basically 50 basis points up to 160 basis points. That's a 300% increase. So that's like a rocket ship going off straight up. It's not like an airplane taking off. This is a rocket ship, and that usually causes a financial crisis somewhere. We think any time it's up three standard deviations over 60 trading days, over the next 60 trading days, the mathematical odds of mean reversion are high, extremely high. When it corrects, we think gold then rockets back to the 2000 level. We still believe in the next 3 years, gold is going to $4,000 based on the global G20 money printing and the negative interest rate scenario. But this is part of that. It happened a big surge last year. It happened the year before. There was a 9-month surge. Last year, there was an 8-month surge in the price of gold. Then you get this sort of correction. I think we'll get the next leg.
Well, it certainly is exciting, no doubt about it. I guess with 2 minutes yet, I want to ask you just to have you touch on your JETS ETF. Are we back now? I mean, I haven't gotten on a plane since since this time last year, actually, when I flew back from San Francisco. But are we? How's the airlines industry doing, and how's JETS doing?
JETS is doing remarkably well. The airlines are still trying to get to that break-even level. We had this big run last year at the very bottom of April the 15th. Less than 90,000 people a day were being cleared by the TSA. TSA publishes this daily. Uh-huh. And it soared to 1.3 million. Now, what happened is a year ago, prior to the crisis, America was clearing 2.7 million passengers a day. 700,000 were inbound from Europe, Asia, and Latin America. That fell down to less than 90,000. Then it soared back to 1.3 million, and that's predominantly domestic flights. And we still have got a long way to go. We fell below a million. Now we're above that 50-day moving average. The vaccines are improving. People are getting better. Like, more and more people are getting the vaccine. And you're starting to see tourism. So business travel is not there like it used to be. And I think it's going to take another 6 months before we start getting a torque up in business travel. But tourism is huge. Now Southwest Airlines is flying nonstop from Phoenix to Cabo San Lucas. Mm-hmm. You're seeing small cities in New York State, Illinois, Indiana flying south. People mm-hmm. want to get some sunshine. So right. I remain pretty positive. I think that Europe in the next 2 months will get a big opening, and that will be a big rebound for the airlines.
All right. Well, I hope you're right, for sure, because I'm looking to make that trip to Portugal with my wife sometime soon. Frank, and just get out and move again. I really miss that. I know most people do. I want to thank you so much, Frank, for spending time with us. Lots of very interesting things you told us today. And we'll look forward to keeping up with your Hive and various other things you're doing going forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, Michael Oliver, Chris Powell of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, and an executive from Firefox Gold will be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.